Beate Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, the mercy world, or the Catholic Church. Today, my visitor is Lindsay Freya. Lindsay, a warm welcome and hi to my To Our Ready program.
Thank you.
Lindsay is the media and communications spokesperson for the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. Before taking on this role, she was the first layperson to be appointed media spokesperson for the Catholic Church in New Zealand. For almost 25 years, she represented the Church's position on moral, ethical, and doctrinal issues. She was in Rome when Pope Benedict XVI was elected, and she was again on St. Peter's Square in the Vatican when our present Pope Francis was elected. Lindsay is a remarkable woman who was trained as an opera singer by one of our late Mercy Sisters, Dame Sister Mary Leo. In 1995, Lindsay also became a dame, but as her award was given to her for her great contributions to the Catholic Church, she's made a papal dame. Lindsay, thank you very much for coming to the studio. And as I just said, you are the media and communications spokesperson for the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. Mm-hmm. Does this role imply that you have to answer all questions regarding the Catholic Church here in Auckland?
Questions from the media, usually. That's right, my role, sort of representing the church to the media, and on general issues, you know, or general inquiries. Quite a lot of people come to us via our website with inquiries, but there are times when it's more appropriate for me to find another person to deal with a specific matter, somebody who's working in a particular area who would have more expertise than I, and it's appropriate that it's not always me, sometimes somebody else as well. Just depends on the topic largely.
So sometimes you're the link person, you're the first contact for the media, and then you'd look for the person who can answer best.
Yes, in that case, a sort of coordinating role.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And all kind of media, so social media, you mentioned Facebook and the website and the newspapers, of course.
Yes, the sort of mainstream media, the newspapers, radio, television. Quite a lot of radio work I do these days, I find, because there's a lot of talkback radio, and they get onto topics, and they'll quite often come to me to say, can you tell us what is the actual Catholic position on a particular topic?
Okay. Hmm. And sometimes it seems like there's so much happening in and about the church. How do you manage to keep track of all events and occurrences?
Well, I read a lot of local and international Catholic news and other news, not just Catholic news, but other social issues that might impact on the church. And I get in via online daily and sometimes weekly bulletins from the Vatican and from other Catholic institutions, Catholic publications and so on. So it's important to keep reading and knowing what's going on in the world, in the church and beyond.
Yeah, because you might get a question that doesn't even relate directly to Auckland and you still need to reply.
Yes, if it doesn't relate directly to the Auckland Diocese, I'll refer it on to the diocese in question or to the National Office of the Bishops' Conference, because my job is quite specifically to talk really on behalf of the Auckland Diocese, and sometimes that can be about general matters, but that it would have some impact in Auckland.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who have just tuned in, you are listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or visit our website or Facebook page at Te Ngaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Lindsay Freya. Lindsay is the media and communications spokesperson for the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. Lindsay, in recent weeks, there have been many reports about abuse within different institutions and even the government. One of them is the child migration program, through which thousands of children were sent overseas and, among others, ended up with religious orders in different Commonwealth countries. Have some of these children also been sent to New Zealand?
Well, as far as I can understand, those who were sent down to this part of the world went largely to Australia. I haven't really found out that there were any here. During that time, in the 50s, we received quite a number of little children, young people from Hungary, And I think from Poland, there was quite an influx of young Polish refugees. They were young refugee children. In fact, I do remember there was one at our school in Auckland here. But as far as I know, not from the UK, because that child migration program was a UK program. And I checked it out and found that about 130,000 little children were sent from the 20s to the 70s. To other countries, or English-speaking countries around the world. And it was actually in 2010 that the British PM, Gordon Brown, apologised for having done that, for having let those children down. So that was, you know, a realisation from them that it was really not a good thing to do, and that so many of those children suffered terribly, not just from abuse, but from disorientation and from being taken out of their culture, taken away from their usually solo parents and so on.
So the reason was because they came from solo parents?
Not only solo, but parents who weren't able to, I suppose during the war, you know, a lot of those children were orphaned, and also solo parents or parents who weren't for one reason or another able to look after them. And so the poor little things were uprooted and sent off to the other side of the world, which must have been a terrible hardship for those children.
And in New Zealand, when there were cases like what, when you say solo parents, quite a few they were given to orphanages and other places within New Zealand, but they stayed in New Zealand.
Well, I don't know how many came here. I just checked it out and found that they seemed to go largely to Australia. Mm. Excuse my croaky voice, I have a bit of a cold. But as I say, the Polish children came, but they were actually adopted into families. And there were quite a number of Polish families here who took those children in. And at one stage, Cardinal Wojtyła, who became John Paul II, actually visited here to visit those children, came to New Zealand to visit those children. I think they were housed largely in Auckland and in Wellington.
Yeah. And I understand that there is a Royal Commission in London now who looks closer into cases presented. Do you think that the religious groups and congregations could learn from this kind of commission about how to handle abuse accusations?
Well, look, we can always learn. I think it's true to say that here in this country, some 20-odd, 25 years ago, we set up a protocol and a process for dealing with complaints of abuse. And that was signed up to by the six dioceses of the country, plus the major religious orders. So right from the word go, when sexual abuse started to become known, I think it was true to say that we did our very best to set up a process for dealing with that. So as for learning from the commission about how to handle, I think we can always learn. There are always learnings to be found.
And it's there are some results that have been only recently published from that commission.
Yes, that's the you're talking about the Australian one. Yes. Just one other thing too, and what we did some, I suppose, 10, 12 years ago, we set up a National Office for Professional Standards, and that was to actually employ independent people who could look at the way we would deal with a particular case, so that if a complainant felt that the outcome of their complaint wasn't satisfactory, either by a diocese or by a religious order, they could actually go to that office and have it reinvestigated. In fact, we were actually very blessed with the first person, the first director we appointed to that office, because he was an elder in the Baptist Church, and he was also a former police commissioner. Mm. So he had obviously very good investigative techniques at his disposal, and that office has been a real godsend actually to us, because they have been able to investigate the way complaints were handled or mishandled, as the case may be.
I interviewed Bill Kilgallen, who is now the head of this office for professional standards.
Yes.
And he would then also be like a link person for you when any question comes up where you say, well, it's Bill Kilgallen who should answer that.
Oh, absolutely. I think anything now to do with abuse of that kind, unless it was very specifically about something to do with the Auckland Diocese, but we would refer those complaints to Bill, because that's the role now of the, we call it NOPS, National Office of Professional Standards. Yes.
Do you get a lot of requests or a lot of...
Fewer and fewer as time goes on, thank God.
Mm. Mm. And you personally, are you asked by media more, or is it the same?
We're starting to get some inquiries now as a result of the Royal Commission in Australia. The Royal Commission for Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse. And, you know, we found recently the stats that were released about 2 weeks ago, I think, from this showed, as I think you know, about 7% of priests in Australia between 1950 and 2010 have actually been, the complaints against them have been substantiated. That's a very large number.
Absolutely. Mm. And I understand that the Royal Commission will also look at issues such as the sacrament of confession, celibacy, how priests and religious are selected, trained and supervised, and the church's structure and governance, as it examines why child abuse was so prominent in Catholic institutions. Is this agreed with the relevant authorities in the Vatican?
Well, I wouldn't say agreed, but I do know the Vatican's keeping a close watch on this whole process. I mean, questions of celibacy and so on are very much to do with the domain of the church and not of the state, and the seal of confession and all of those things. Just in terms of the way seminarians are trained and the formation of young men or older men who come forward for looking for priesthood to the seminary, we have much more rigorous processes in place here in New Zealand now than we ever did before, as a result of the complaints and what we've learned about the difficulties of celibacy for many people, probably for most people in one way or another. And these men have to actually undergo a rigorous process of their sort of psychosexual health and ability to be celibate. Very hard in today's world, of course.
So you have the process before the young men become priests, and that might be one of the reasons why there are not as many candidates for priesthood at this stage than in the 1950s, because their selection is a lot stricter.
Yes, well, I think the selection is not so much to do with that kind of process that I just spoke about, but certainly an assessment has to take place as to do they have the right motivation, and are they likely to be, are they likely to stay with it? And then as the process goes on over years, they're all the time they're being assessed as to their suitability to continue.
And also the sacrament of confession is quite important. If you think that if it could be misused, then people won't go anymore, so it doesn't really help.
Yes, so one of the doctrines of the church really is the sacrosanct seal of confession, that anything a person confesses to a priest in confession, in reconciliation as we now call it, must be sacrosanct, may not be given to anybody. And a priest would never even, I mean, if the law of a country changed, a priest would still say, no, I simply cannot comply with that legislation. The law of the church and of God in this sense is paramount.
Because that's where the trust is based.
Absolutely. Because the priest, we see in the sacrament of confession or reconciliation, is sort of what we would say in persona Christi, in the person of Christ. And so it's as though you're actually talking to the Lord, to Christ. And so a priest dare not betray that confidence.
But he can, if he wants to, he can talk to the person and motivate that person to do something him or herself.
Most certainly. I mean, a priest will always give advice in that context where he can. Yeah.
So it's good to keep that sacrament holy so that people can trust and that the priest has the chance. But that's something that the seminarians would also learn in their training.
Yes.
And you just mentioned the statistics that were released of 7% of priests in Australia's Catholic Church were accused of sexually abusing children over the past several decades. And between 1980 and 2015, 4,444 people reported that they had been abused at more than 1,000 Catholic institutions across Australia. Mm. These are quite large figures.
They are. And I was watching live on my computer the other day where three of the Australian bishops who are spokesmen on behalf of the church were actually talking to the members of the commission. And it was quite heartrending listening to them, listening to their grief and their genuine sense of betrayal and shame as they actually answered the questions. And acknowledging that, you know, that we really did mess up terribly in those years. No excuses about that, except that we do know that back 20, 30, 40 years ago, the knowledge that people had of people's psychosexuality wasn't really understood. It was thought that, well, somebody has abused children, a particular person, let's say, and he seems to be genuinely remorseful and he might be sent elsewhere, it wasn't understood that that whole condition of pedophilia is not something that is just cured like that. You actually, it's a process that is probably lifelong, that has to be monitored and assessed constantly throughout a person's life.
So the change of conditions, of living conditions, wouldn't change it?
And not at all, no. Mm-hmm. There has to be all kinds of psychotherapy done, and, as I say, living in a monitored situation and being removed right away from where they can have access to children.
And were there also any cases about people who accused in a false accuse? Are there any?
You mean a false accusation? Oh, yes. That happens too. And, well, you know, you can understand that there might be some people who feel, well, there might be something in this for me. If I can say that a case of abuse happened to me, I might end up getting some money, because there have been payouts, quite substantial payouts at times. And you can understand that, you know, people can be selfish and think, well, I'll try this too.
And how do you react in your role with these figures? Because I can see, of course, it's really shocking to hear the figures, but you are in the communication role, so you are representing the voice of the Catholic Church here in Auckland. And when these figures come to you, you have to react somehow. It leaves us speechless. And yet, how do you deal with answering to these questions?
Well, in earlier years, I was speaking on behalf of the whole church in New Zealand, not just for Auckland, and had to deal with a lot. I sort of cut my teeth in this work that I do on that whole question of abuse. And I often think it was, with hindsight, quite wise of the bishops to appoint a woman to be their spokesperson at that time. It had always been a man previously, a woman who was married and a mother, and I happened to be the mother of a young son. So you can imagine how I felt when I was listening to these cases and getting inquiries from the media. One particular talkback host one day was talking to me about it, and he said, you know, you're paid to do this job, you're just a spin doctor, and naturally we don't really sort of believe that what you're telling us is the whole truth. And I said to him, I'm the mother of a young son, and if I found out that anybody tried to harm my son, whew, you can just imagine how I would feel about that. So I said, don't you ever accuse me of cover-up or of not being truthful about this. And I'm absolutely passionate about it, because it was a terrible shame for us all. And it wasn't a bishop, but one of the senior Catholic representatives who was talking to that Australian Royal Commission 2 or 3 weeks ago, he actually said these words. He said, back then, it was a massive failure and that we need to hang our heads in shame. And I remember seeing just about 2 years ago the American movie Spotlight. It was do you remember that? It was about the investigation by the Boston Globe,
yes,
into the way the church in Boston, the Archdiocese of Boston, handled the complaints. And it was found that it was handled very, very badly by the particular Archbishop, Cardinal Bernard Law. And since then, he was actually moved and sent away. And Cardinal Sean O'Malley came into that role. He was, I think he was Franciscan, as Cardinal Archbishop of Boston. And he went about really cleaning things up. He was the most remarkable man. First of all, he sold the bishop's palatial residence and went and just lived in the local presbytery. And he did everything he could to sort of clean up the degree of corruption that had crept into the administration and various areas of the administration of the Archdiocese of Boston. So I actually think, I remember writing a review for it and saying that I felt it was a movie that every Catholic should see. A lot of people disagreed with me, think, oh, this is terrible. But I also read in the Vatican, I heard on Vatican Radio that they actually recommended it as being a very, very good and very truthful movie.
Yes, I remember that you wrote that review in the New Zealand Catholic. Mm. About the spotlight, yes. And now our current Pope has said several times that he has zero tolerance for abuse.
Yes.
And but some days ago, Mary Collins, a survivor of abuse, who's in the same committee as Bill Kilgallen in the Vatican, has resigned from the committee which Pope Francis has introduced. How do you see the way forward for our Pope?
Well, I think this is not so much a problem of Pope Francis. I just thought you might be interested to know that she said she believed that the Pope was sincere in his approach. She didn't criticize him at all. And she said even that despite the full support of the Pope and his approval of what the commission was recommending, she felt that there had been constant setbacks inside the Vatican from other Vatican bureaucrats. And she described the blocking late last year of a simple recommendation approved by Pope Francis by Vatican officials as the last straw for her. So she's blaming certain Vatican officials. And I know that when she did resign, Cardinal Sean O'Malley, the one I was talking about earlier, he actually said how greatly missed she would be because he'd been working with her previously and is continuing to work with her in an educational role on setting guidelines for bishops. And I think it's really not so much a question of Pope Francis and the way forward. It's that Pope Francis clearly is doing his very best, but he's up against, obviously, a cabal maybe, of officials in the Vatican who are sort of blocking things or slowing things down. And I think we all know that perhaps that was one of the reasons why Pope Benedict resigned, because he felt that he didn't have the strength and perhaps the energy to actually deal with that. And Pope Francis has come and certainly dealing with it very strongly, actually often to the criticism that he gains from certain ultra-conservative cardinals in the church, as you may have read about some of their criticisms of him. So for him, it's not easy. It's not easy for him to remain courageous and strong, but he's doing his best.
But it depends on the committees that he calls in, and because he cannot do the work all himself.
No, exactly. But, and he has to be advised by people, and he has to learn to take advice of he does take advice of the people he trusts. It's a question of who do you trust? And I think it's really, really significant for that commission or that committee that Cardinal Sean O'Malley is actually heading it up. I think it's very sad that Marie Collins has found it necessary, but maybe she feels that by stepping away, she has so very publicly, all around the world, the publicity has been going on, perhaps she feels that by doing that, it's raising that question, raising that problem that Pope Francis is dealing with in certain areas of Vatican administration.
She certainly created an awareness for Pope Francis doing his best, but even though if he's doing his best, he needs to have good men around him who believe this in the same ways. And of course, in the committee, you always have different people and
with different agenda, and you know, he needs good men and women. And sadly, it seems a good woman stepped away, but she might have been doing it for a very good reason.
Are there other women on that committee?
I can't tell you that. I don't know the rest of the members of the committee.
Yeah, I remember that Bill Kilgallen was mentioning especially her because he said she's on the committee and she talked openly about what happened to her.
Yes.
So that is really important because most of the victims you cannot talk about, but she was happy that her example was mentioned.
Yes, very brave of her to actually do so.
Yes, yeah. And it was good for the Pope, from Pope side, to appoint her onto that committee.
It was brave of him to do so, and he's probably very, very sad that she's done what she's done, but it may actually have a good spin-off in the end.
Mm. Is there in Auckland, are the seminarians talking about these kind of committees and getting to know more about also the bureaucracy behind it?
Well, I think, you know, they learn a lot about the structures of the church, of course, as part of their formation, naturally. But it's at different levels too, because at the moment in our seminary, quite a lot of our young seminarians are people who are not born in New Zealand, young men who've come in from other countries and other cultures. And the church in other countries quite often has a somewhat different culture, if I can say that, culture in inverted commas, mm-hmm. of the way people worship. And so it's quite hard for them, and I think it's quite a challenge in the seminary to actually deal with such a wide diversity of cultures of the young men who are there.
Is there also regular training, because things are changing? So once the priest is ordained, he still needs to know what's coming up and what's going on, and especially with issues around new committees, commissions, and are they continually trained?
Yes. Well, there are always opportunities for them to actually take part in all the new things that are happening in the church and the way things are being done. Yes.
So they don't have to go They can go, if they want to, they can go and take part in these trainings.
When they're at the seminary, they have to. It's all compulsory. But once they're ordained, it's really over to them to see, to keep abreast of the times, if you like, mm-hmm. and just go along to the opportunities that are being offered by the diocese.
And what about the new priests coming in from other countries? You just mentioned that they had a different training.
Yes.
So just to get them on the same page. So
there are all sorts of orientation processes that they have to go through. Yes.
And so what do you think is the most challenging part of your job in these last 2 years or 3 years?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's the fact that our country is becoming increasingly secular. And that's a challenge for all people of faith, be it the Christian faith or any other faith, that our society is largely a society of people with no faith and no understanding of what faith is all about. So there's quite a big divide there between people of faith and people without faith. And I think having to hold the line, as it were, in my job, and in the, you know, for all of us, all of us in the Christian community, for example, we're talking to people who don't even know the language that we're using. So that's the big challenge.
Because I was wondering, for example, when we talk about the sacrament of confession, and you talk to a journalist, and the journalist has no idea of what a sacrament is.
Our bishop said, what's a bishop? I've even had that question. What's a diocese? They just don't know. It's just not in the general consciousness so much now.
Well,
so it is a challenge, and it's not easy. But we just have to plug away there and persevere and keep our message as simple as we can. That's what I love about Pope Francis. He keeps it very, very simple.
Yes, and he uses the words that people understand and that can easily be translated.
Absolutely. Get out there into the streets where people are. He would say to the priests, get the smell of the sheep on you, your shepherds, your pastors. So yes. Get out there and get the smell of the sheep, that sort of thing. It's very, very colourful. Yes. Christ used to talk like that in parables and so on.
Thank you very much, Lindsay. That was very, very enlightening and interesting. And I think that it's good for people to know about what the church is doing, that there is, it's not, nothing is covered up as it used to be. And also, as you mentioned, the context was important, that at certain times they didn't see it as covering up. They had a different view on many things.
A different understanding, of the whole human sexuality, really, basically. Yeah. So thank you very much, Priyat. It's been a pleasure to come and talk to you.
Yeah, thank you, Lindsay. And what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? On our Lenten series, Pondering St. John's Gospel, facilitated by Father Stuart Zeller, has started last Tuesday. On Tuesday, the 14th of March, from 10 to 12 o'clock. And we will start with the series that consists of three other parts, and it is held on the 21st and 28th of March and the 4th of April. You're welcome to attend one or all presentations. On the 22nd and 29th of March, from 7 to 8:30 p.m., Sister Catherine Wiles Pickard is going to facilitate an introductory workshop on Christian meditation. If you are not experiencing meditation yet and you'd like to know more about it, come along. The two workshops are free of charge. Please note also that our Writers' Weekend workshop, facilitated by Joan Rosier Jones, has been postponed to Friday 7th of April to Sunday 9th of April, so you can still register. For all events at our center, please call us at 09-638-6238 or visit our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you, Lindsay, for coming.
Thank you.